Okay, here we are. It's noon. So, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Grapevine Open Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm Nikki and I'm an alcoholic. This is the last week in April that I'll be hosting the meeting. I'll be turning it over to Chris for next week as I will be at the General Service Conference and unable to commit to being present next week. But the speakers are set up and I'm sure that they will wow you just like these two will today. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. You can enjoy the Grapevine Open Meetings every Wednesday at noon Eastern Time on this virtual platform. The meeting will be recorded and will be posted as an audio podcast every Friday on all podcast platforms on aagrapevine.org and on YouTube. This is an open meeting and everyone is welcome. We're glad you're all here, especially newcomers. If you're new to AA and want to learn more about our program of recovery from alcoholism, we encourage you to find an AA group in your area. Contact with group members will help you to find a sponsor and help you learn about the AA program of recovery from alcoholism. This is the Grapevine Daily quote for April 22nd. A coffee pot simmers on the kitchen stove. A hospital sobers the stricken sufferer. General headquarters broadcast the AA message. Our service lifelines span the seven seas. All these symbolize AA in action. For action is the magic word of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's from AA co-founder Bill W. on November 1951, Services Make AA Tick, Best of the Grapevine, Volume 1. You can sign up to receive the daily quote as a daily email at aagrapevine.org, or you can find it on the Grapevine app every morning. This is an excerpt from this month's Grapevine magazine. I like to show the picture. I know you can't all see it, but I do have the magazine. This is from April Grapevine, page 61, from You Did Good, Kid. I try to wear the world like a loose garment, which is ironic given how tightly I used to cling to everything: approval, resentment, guilt. Now I let go. I let all of it go, except my diet soda. I'm still working on that one. Throughout the day, I let go of the things that I now realize don't serve me. Control, ego, the last word in a mediocrity argument. It's surprisingly satisfying, like spiritual thrift shopping. And it turns out the less I obsess over getting my way, the more life seems to cooperate, which is honestly fine. When you know better, you do better. We'll start today's meeting with a reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is page 62 of the fourth edition. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible, and there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them, even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing on or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. This will be a two-speaker meeting. There will be no sharing by attendees, so please sit back, relax, and listen. We often hear it is best to try and identify with the speakers rather than compare your stories to theirs. I'm going to introduce our first speaker, Najini.
Hello, everybody. My name is Najini, and I am an alcoholic. It is wonderful to be at this meeting. Thank you, Nikki, for asking me to share. So I'll start straight off and tell you how I met Nikki. I met Nikki at an online concepts workshop she was organizing with other AA friends moons ago, around 5 years ago. Since then, Nikki has supported the AA International community and helped us AA members around the world to have access to the AA Grapevine app. Thank you. And also the whole team, of course. Last month, we celebrated Nikki's birthday online and we thoroughly enjoyed ourselves with other friends. My husband and I have known since the pandemic. We used to all meet up at the Rusted Servants AA online meeting, which was at 1 a.m. at our time. But as we get older, it's a bit difficult to stay up late at night these days. So it's now 6:05 here in Sweden. Usually, I'm at my local AA women's meeting, so I give a shout out to the women there. And also, I would like to say hello to my friends locally and around the world who play an important part for my recovery today, especially for Jing in China, who logs in and it's midnight in China. The lengths we go. Take care, Jing. My friends are situated in Australia, China, Japan, Mongolia, Southeast Asia, Middle East, Africa, Europe, and North and South America. And Nikki knows a lot of them, so she knows I'm telling the truth. I'm part of an online international network of AA members from around 67 countries, and we're growing thanks to technology and being online. And I just want to also give a shout out for this meeting, the flexibility, which makes it possible for many of my friends and I to listen in on the podcast at our convenience, despite the different time zones we find ourselves. I've really enjoyed listening to the previous speakers. I mean, this is a new meeting. It's been around for a couple of months, and it's a very exciting development. On top of that, members are able to translate the transcripts of the meetings to their native languages, and that's a more rewarding experience for some of us who English is not our first language. And I, these days, I'm also in contact with AA members who are learning English to be able to get more support in order to stay sober in AA. So again, tools like this is of invaluable service. So a little bit about what was it like for me before AA, right? I have a life as an active alcoholic. I started drinking at a very young age. And by 18, my drinking was getting out of control. And I found myself at university, and I kept telling myself, this is part of a student life, and I will grow up, and I won't need to drink anymore. Just have fun now. Everybody drinks and parties as a student. Little did I know, I was 10 years of acute pain and misery, and, ended up, as we know, the progression of a disease, the depth of the trauma I experienced as an active alcoholic at such a young age. And I just could not stop. After my studies, I continued to drink. As we heard from the text from the big book, I've described well my battles as a hostage to alcoholism, I would say. I was running around like a headless chicken. Drown in what we just read, the three S's, self-will, selfishness, and self-centeredness. I was not able to find a way out despite my futile attempts to use the help provided by professionals and trying many numerous organizations. And every time I tried to control my drinking, it seemed to get worse, and I didn't understand why. So, what happened to me in AA? Well, what happened was finally, I stumbled into the rooms of AA, and yet I still had some fight in me, and I thought I could stop drinking by myself. I didn't think it was such a big issue. I thought I'd been drinking the way I had because I had my personal reasons. It was no one's business. I was 28 at the time, and I was really surprised that it wasn't an easy matter to just stop, it's shock horror. And so I finally came back to AA when I had exhausted all other possibilities. I had nowhere else to go. And then what happened here was I experienced the power of identification. I could hear people talking about their history with alcoholism, what happened to them. And since I was in so much pain, I thought, I too, that happened to me too. And it was the power of the oral tradition. I read a lot, I tried to assimilate a lot of facts. But somebody, as we're doing here, talking with emotions, looking at each other in the eyes, did something to me, zing me. And also the fact that, at that time, I could barely put two sentences together. I was barely functioning. My life was so painful, and I had run out of answers. So at that time, I went to two, three meetings a day, and I was hanging around AAs in between, and that's my beginning. I broke this isolation. I found myself in my last few days, my last days of drinking. I've tried to sound to make it a bit poetic, but it wasn't. I learned here that I had a medical condition. It is not my fault that I'm an alcoholic. Other people can get cancer, another medical condition. I happen to be landed with alcoholism. What a huge relief. And most important, that once I pick up a drink, my body craves more. My mind can only think about alcohol. I will feel like my being is being taken over by an entity that forces me to do what it takes to fix. And that's my reality. But here in AA, I learned what was really wrong with me. And as the quote from the second reading, first reading, Nikki shared from the AA Grapevine article, I like the bit when she wrote, "When you know better, you do better." And that's what happened. So thanks to AA, my sobriety date is September 12th, 1997. Right. So that story comes from the April edition of the Grapevine and on general service. Another topic I like to talk about, so I'm going right in. My recovery life really blossomed when I had the chance to participate in general service. And I want to take the opportunity to thank my good friend Anna-Lena in Sweden, who will probably be listening to this, who encouraged me to become a service delegate in Sweden. It would have never occurred to me to embrace service at a national level because I was just happy doing service at the group level and being a part of something bigger than myself. I've also had the opportunity for my travels to experience the AA service structure in different countries and so see and continue to work, see our 36 AA principles in actions, which I mean the 12 steps, 12 traditions, and 12 concepts. Hence, meeting Nikki at a concept workshop, which was amazing, and went off during the pandemic to get to meet other people who are focused in recovery in using all 36 principles. That has been very exciting, and it continued to be so because I thought once the pandemic was over, we all say goodbye and sort of as we say in Sweden, hej då. And no, we've stayed in touch. We've gone out of the way to keep it alive, what we that background we shared at a time. So that's exciting. I've also experienced AA in different languages. So for me, I've had a different experience at that. And each time I've moved, I had to be like a newcomer and use basic words and get to know the lingo, the recovery lingo. And that's been useful in my case. These days, I use English, French, and Swedish on a regular basis. And recovery can get a bit confusing. I mix my syllables and idioms at times, but somehow we get by. And also, in my case, I've been online because of my travels for over 25 years. So I've seen AA evolve. And where we are today is a real treat compared to how it was in the days of emails and texts and so forth. And so, what is it like today for me in AA? And the question poses, thanks to AA, I'm now a middle-aged woman amongst. The last few years have been tough with health issues. Last year, I underwent cataract surgery, and now I'm dealing with complications from that. And again, I try to wear life as a loose garment. And my solution to that has been I've given away a lot of my personal possessions, have moved. I'm embracing a simple lifestyle, declutter away from diversions, and that's helping me. That's my definition of life as a loose garment. I'm also married to another AA member, And we have shared our lives together for the past 21 years. I think he's on his way to an in-person local meeting at the moment. So at the moment, my life has changed and I have more time for recovery, which is great. I'm in a city where AA is alive and kicking in Sweden. We have four groups and 12 meetings a week. Last month, AA Sweden celebrated 70 years, and some of us spent the weekend at meetings. We also went dancing. We were entertained by a comedian who was traveling, who was happened to be in AA too. We had lunch together. So that was fun. And I'd like to share a story that touches me especially close to my heart. Last July, I could not make it to the AA International Convention in Vancouver, Canada. But a dear friend of mine, Monica, took a coffee cup to meetings and put my name on it and sent me the photo. At one point, we were able to be at the same hybrid meeting, she in person and I online. And this is the kind of relationships I have and the gifts of recovery today. So if you're listening, Monica, hi. So I can't say enough, you know, the quality of life today I have, as long as I remember not to pick up that first drink. It's an invaluable support of sponsorship and mentors. I'm going to list a few of the women. I can't help myself. Inspiring women who I'm speaking to you now, and I can feel them with me as I speak. Women like Joanne, Sarah, Monica, Louis, Nikki, Vera, Pragna, Diggy, Rico, Uliana, Esther, Anita, to name a few who accept me as I am. And I wanted very much to say the recovery women in my life come in different roles. They come as sponsors, service sponsors, co-sponsors and sponsees, my peers in AA, similar life situation, we sustain each other. And these experienced friendships, these are meaningful friendships, some of them have lasted decades, you know. I've never had that kind of continuity in my life before for various reasons, not forgetting the opportunity to meet new members and relapsers regularly, both online and in person as well. So I would also like to say what, you know, give a shout out to WIM, the Women International Meeting, which is online every day, 24/7 since 2020. And these women do an amazing, remarkable job. So in my travels, as I'm still very active online, it's such a relief now I can guide other women to a place where they can be safe wherever they are. So before I end, I would like to share with you a quick dive into my recovery calendar 2026. It's a bit of a show off, but I can't help myself. In January, I met up with friends at an AA in-person convention in Belgium. Some of the friends I've known for 20 years, and I haven't been able to go there for a few years. So it was a great reunion and a whole new generation as well. It's an English-speaking convention. In February, I supported friends from around the world, women, online at the 62nd Hybrid AA International Women Conference. Nikki and I did service on one of those, remember? In March, I participated in the 10th Women Convention organized by the AA Women in Argentina. It's inspiring me to try to learn a bit of Spanish, but we had interpretation, which was fantastic. In May, I will attend an in-person convention on an island in Sweden. That will be along with quite a few members from my home group here. And in the summer, I'm looking forward to attend various AA activities around Sweden, including a convention next to a spectacular waterfall, and also at the AA National Convention here in Sweden, celebrating 70 years. In August, then I'll be heading off to the third online convention of VAWA, Voices of AA Women in Africa. You're all welcome if you're women. In October, I will be supporting our friends who will be attending the AA World Service meeting in Portugal. Maybe Nikki will be there, who knows? And in November, I will attend the AA Hybrid Convention out of East Africa. So with that, thank you.
Najini, thanks. You must be exhausted. I'm exhausted just listening to all of it. It's I know. I remember exactly the time that I met Najini and her lovely husband, and they would show up at these concepts workshops, and there were times that there were 400 people on those, and it was amazing. And we have maintained our relationship over the years, and I'm always grateful to call you a friend. And you helped me really to understand that Alcoholics Anonymous is so much bigger than just the soil I'm standing on. And I had the joy of working closely with Najini on a convention a few years ago, and we were able to make it so that many people could listen and be part of in many different languages. So I appreciate you, and I'm really happy to call you a friend. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Lily, who, by the way, is in the room next door to me. So if she or I run into any technical difficulties, we'll run and help each other. But if you want to, oh, I've got announcements first. I'm sorry. See, I'm messing up. The seventh tradition of AA states that every AA group should be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. AA members can help by contributing to your group, your local office, your area and district, and to the General Service Board. There's a great pamphlet called Self-Support, Where Money and Spirituality Mix. You can find it on AA.org. Grapevine does not accept direct contributions, but of course, we do have expenses. The best way to support Grapevine is to subscribe to the magazine, either in print, online, or on the apps. You can subscribe to the magazine in print or online by visiting aagrapevine.org. You can subscribe to the app by searching for AA Grapevine on the App Store on your phone. You can also purchase Grapevine books, greeting cards, and other items at your local AA office. By doing so, you'll be supporting both Grapevine and your local office. You can also visit the Grapevine online store at aagrapevine.org. The AA Grapevine Carry the Message Project always allows you to help us help others by providing magazine subscriptions to those who are incarcerated, hospitalized, living in remote areas, or stuck at home. Visit aagrapevine.org and click on Carry the Message to learn more. We invite you to listen to our other weekly podcast, the AA Grapevine Half Hour Variety Hour, which Najini has been on before, which is available for free on all podcast platforms and on aagrapevine.org. Check out our primary purpose, the official podcast of the General Service Office of Alcoholics Anonymous. Tune in to hear how AA's message continues to reach those who need it most. For all podcasts, be sure to subscribe on your favorite streaming platform so you can catch all the episodes. Please follow Grapevine on Instagram and on YouTube as well. Now I will introduce Lily.
Hi, everyone. My name is Lily. I'm an alcoholic. It's always a pleasure to be asked to speak, although I have to say that it amazes me that this woman that was a drunk mother could fall off in a bar stool in Windham, Maine, and end up on a podcast that's going all over the world. My sobriety date is November 8th, 1989. There's nobody that's more surprised than I am that I'm still here. I did not have a desire to quit drinking when I got here. A lot of people in my life had a desire for me to quit, but I just wasn't one of them. I knew I was an alcoholic. I bragged about it. I told everybody, if you don't like it, too bad, but that's who I am. And that is not at all my story. So let me tell you what it was like. And Nikki and I have been friends since Nikki walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. We immediately clicked. We have so many interests that are the same. Most of all, and most important to both of us, I think, is the fact that we love having fun and we have a lot of fun doing service work. And we get asked a lot to do service work, and she's followed the same example that was given to me when I got here. And that is that if anybody in AA asks you to do anything, your answer should be yes. So let me go back and tell you what it was like when I was a kid. I was brought up in a very nice home. I did not have alcoholic parents. My family was not dysfunctional. I had four brothers. I was smack in the middle. And I learned how to manipulate them
when I was probably two. And all I had to do was let a tear fall out of my eye and they would fall into my hands and do whatever I wanted them to do. Nobody else in my family appears to be alcoholic. I think that back in my ancestry, there may be, but I don't believe that my alcoholism was caused by anybody in my family. I believe that I have a disease called alcoholism and that I had no idea it was a disease. I just thought I liked to drink and raise hell. And I had my first drink at the age of 19. I don't remember anybody in my family saying you better not drink, but it sort of was like the unwritten rule. Don't drink until you're old enough. So the occasion of my first drink was my wedding reception. I was 19 years old. The reception had a big service in a church, got married at, you know, traditional wedding with a beautiful gown and my dad walking me down the aisle and then going to a reception at the VFW, which would later become the Sahara Club of Alcoholics Anonymous. Anyway, I didn't know anything about drinking. What I knew about drinking, I'd seen on TV. You know, somebody would make a toast, and if they made a toast, then you would drink the drink. And my dad walked me in. We walked up to the bar, and he said, what are you going to have? And I said, I don't know. What are you having? And he was having a whiskey and ginger. And so I said, well, I'll have the same thing. And if you've ever drank in a service club, you get a lot of whiskey and a little bit of ginger. And he said the magic words, here's to you, kid. And I downed that drink. And the next thing I remember is taking my wedding gown off on the front lawn. And that's the way it was going to be for me for the rest of my drinking. Whenever I drank, I lost clothes. I don't know what it is about alcoholic women, but I've met a lot of them in my journey. And for some reason, we think it's a good idea to show you parts of our body that are better left covered up. Anyway, I didn't start out to be an alcoholic. The man that I married was an alcoholic. I didn't know he was an alcoholic. I just wasn't paying attention. I got married for all the wrong reasons, and I didn't know that until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. So what happened was we lost a child to SIDS. And he never got over that. And I didn't know how to comfort him. I came from an Irish family where when bad things happened, you know, you dusted yourself off and picked yourself up and went on with your life. And I had no idea how to comfort him at all. But as the years progressed, I drank more and more. We had two more children after that. And I had alcoholic behavior before I really had alcohol as a problem, drinking. When my third child was born, one of the things that happened for me was I was scared to go to sleep because I was afraid something would happen to this baby. And I took no-dos to stay awake to make sure that the baby was breathing all night long. And it just... I realized today that that was post-traumatic stress from losing a child, but I didn't know that at the time. Anyway, the man that I married was alcoholic, and when I caught him stealing money out of the kid's piggy bank, I knew that it was I couldn't live like that anymore. And you know, sometimes when he came home, he was in a good mood, and other times he wasn't. And the last night we spent together, we tried to kill each other. And I'm not proud of that today, but that's the truth of the matter. You know, he came in, I was 6 months pregnant. He hit me, I hit him. I pushed him out a second story window. I was ready to drop a vacuum cleaner on his head when the cops got there. And I'm not proud of that today, but that is part of my story. After we divorced, I bought a house. I like to refer to it as what happens to single alcoholic mothers. And that is that we get the big S on our chest. You know, we become super mom. We can do it all. We don't need any help from anybody. Thank you very much. But I can be the doctor, the lawyer, the Indian chief. I can be mom. I can be the little league coach. I can be whatever you need me to be because I can do it all. And I'm going to show you all. And so that began my role as being really selfish and not knowing that that was selfish until I got to AA that, you know, don't tell me I can't do it. I can do anything. And it was a huge disservice to my kids. After I bought that house, I started going out with my pals, and a couple of nights I didn't make it home. And I knew that was wrong, that, you know, I couldn't leave a babysitter in my house all night. So I came up with a plan, and this was my plan. My plan was to buy a 12-pack of beer and strategically place it around the yard. And then I would go out and mow the lawn. And when I got to a beer, I would stop and have one. Well, amazing thing happened. I mean, I drank a whole 12-pack of beer. I was a little dizzy, and the lines weren't pretty straight in the lawn, but the lawn was mowed, and I was where I was supposed to be, and my kids were in the house, and I thought, this is great. And after that, I mowed the lawn every single day. It looked like a golf course out there. I also, when there was no grass to mow, I decided that I could trim the hedges and the bushes around my the landscaping. And I could do that with scissors because I didn't really have any tools. I never had tools. I had makeshift tools. So, but I would stash the beer in the bushes, and then I would get down on my hands and knees and go around and cut the grass around the bushes with a pair of scissors. And when I got to a beer, I'd stop and have one. And that worked for quite a long time. But I live in Maine, and in Maine, in the fall, you don't need to trim anything because the leaves are falling off the trees. I raked the yard. In the wintertime, I shoveled it. I mean, anything that I could do so that I could drink. And shortly after that, as my kids grew older, became teenagers, I became a barroom drunk. I was a barfly, and I went to the bars, and I mean, I prided myself on the fact that I was an alcoholic. I tell everybody in the bar when I walked in, hey, I'm an alcoholic. You know what alcoholics do? They drink. So if you think you're going to have a problem with that, maybe you should move your seat or something. I mean, I don't know who I thought I was, but get the hell out of my way. I'm going to drink. And I'll just tell you, a couple of things that happened to me. At one point in my drinking, I worked for the federal government, and I quit that job. Walked into my boss and asked for a raise, and he said he couldn't give me a raise. And I said, then I quit. And he said, Lily, you can't quit. You have three kids. You're the sole provider for your children. You can't quit. What are you going to do for work? And I said, well, I've always wanted to be a cowgirl, and I'm sure there's a job out there somewhere for a cowgirl. And God was working in my life. I got to tell you, on my way home, I saw a sign, saloon soon opening. We need cowgirls. And I went right in there, and I mean, I was hired on the spot to be a cowgirl. I loved that job because I could drink during the, you know, they always in a bar, you know, they tell you after work, you can have a drink. Well, if you're an alcoholic, like I'm an alcoholic, you have a drink before you even get there. And then you have one when you do get there. And then you continue drinking all night long. And then at the end of the night, you have your end of shift drink. And by then you're drunk. And so, but I love that job. Oh my God, I love that job. The problem was I didn't know enough to go home when my shift ended, you know. And one time, I don't know what happened. I think we went to a keg party. I'm not really sure. I'm not really keen on what really happened, but I know that I lost the front seat of my car. And so I told my friends that, you know, I can't drive my car because I don't have no seat and I don't know what happened to it. And I still don't know what happened to it. But my friends were great inventors, you know, and they said, well, we'll fix you up. And they bolted a milk crate to the front seat where the front seat was and put a pillow on it. And I'm all dressed up like a cowgirl, and it's February in Maine, and it was bitter cold. And I'm riding around the rotary to go to my house. And I rode around about three times, and then the blue lights came on. And I don't know about the rest of you, but for me, I intuitively used to know things before I even knew them. And so I knew that if I opened the car door and the cops saw me sitting on a milk crate, I would be in trouble. It never occurred to me that I might be in trouble because I was drunk. I just thought, whatever you do, don't open the car door. And so he asked me where I lived. Where had I been? He said, and I said, you want me to tell the truth? Yes, we like the truth. I said, well, my horse died, and I've just come from burying him, and I'm crying. And I actually thought that he believed me. I mean, it's February in Maine. You couldn't dig a hole with a backhoe. And he asked me where I lived. And I said, just down the street. And he said, why don't you get there? And that's the way it was in my drink. And I got pulled over several times. I should have been arrested, but I wasn't, because they'd asked me and I'd come up with a cockamamie story that I actually thought they believed. And they just say, why don't you, where do you live? And I'd say, just down the road. They'd say, why don't you get there? And so I got away with a lot. The miracle is I never killed anybody, never hurt myself. Thought I wasn't hurting anybody else, but I was hurting three teenage kids that needed a mother at home. And I couldn't do that. I could not get past the bar on my way home. At the end of my drinking, I'd gotten a job in a school for children with alternative behaviors, which means they were little brats. But they loved me and I loved them, because most of them came from homes where alcoholism and drug addiction was the problem. And I did everything in this job. I mean, I was the bookkeeper, I was the bus driver, I was the cook, I was whatever they wanted me to be, I could be. And they spoke to me a couple of times about my drinking, but I told them it was none of their damn business that I joined a club, and that I was going out on club nights to go participate in this activity, which was throwing dots. And I don't know how I did that. I mean, I was drunk. They just jammed me up at the line and I'd throw the dots wherever they went. They always went someplace good. I don't understand it. I can't play worth a darn now, but anyway. So now it's getting towards the end of my drink and I don't like who I am. So I wake up in the morning and decide who I'm going to be. And then I dress up like that person. And it might be, that I'm going to be Tammy Wynette or Aunt Jemima, or who knew who I was going to be. I would just dress up. And then if they were musicians, I would have to listen to their music, you know, so I would dress up like Jimmy Buffett and I'm driving down the road, listening to Cheeseburger in Paradise. And I was crazy. I mean, it was absolutely nuts and I knew it and everybody else knew it too. I didn't like who I was, though, but I didn't know that this dressing up like other people was a way to avoid what I had become. Deep, deep in my soul, I knew that I was an alcoholic. And I made that promise that every alcoholic makes, tomorrow I won't drink. But, you know, tomorrow never came. And you never say that out loud if you're an alcoholic. You don't ever, ever say to anybody, well, I'm an alcoholic, tomorrow I'm quitting drinking. You just say it to yourself. And what happened is I could never make it through the next day without drinking. And so the night before my last drunk, which I had my last drink on October the 28th of 1989, but I consider November 8th to be my sobriety date. And this is why. I dyed my hair purple and it was about the color of the shirt that Nikki's got on. Long before it was fashionable for people to have colored hair. No big deal today. Everybody's got colored hair. But I was a trendsetter, you know. So, and I remember sitting at the bar and saying to the bartender, I think I might be an alcoholic, but I'm not sure. And you should keep the drinks coming while I make up my mind. And then later in the evening, I remember saying to this fellow, I'm going to ask God to give me a sign. If I'm an alcoholic, God will give me a sign. I'll quit drinking. And by now I was driving a 15 passenger van for the school. And I bought a van for myself to carry my athletic equipment in, which was a set of dots. And really what that was all about is that I had a bed in the back and I didn't have to drive drunk, because I was terrified that if I got arrested for driving drunk, it would be on the front page of the paper. Anyway, the next morning, I got in the school van and I went and picked up 15 kids. And on my way across a country road, I felt this pressure in my chest, like, oh, my God, what's happening? And pretty soon I started sweating profusely. And it dawned on me that I might be having a heart attack. And I said this prayer, God, please don't let me go off the road with all these kids on this van. And I made it to work. And the next thing I remember is waking up in the ambulance thinking it didn't need to be that bad. Didn't need to be that big a sign. And the next thing after that, my brother and my mother were in the hospital, and my brother came up to the stretcher that I was on and said, "What happened?" And I said, "I don't know, but whatever they're giving me, it's turning my hair purple." And I knew that was a lie, but you know, I had to have a reason for having purple hair. I mean, normal people just didn't have purple hair. So on November 8th, I was released from the hospital, and the beautiful home that I bought all by myself that I could take care of everything, I had literally destroyed with my drinking. The windows had holes in them. They happened to be bullet holes. I don't know if I was shooting out. The neighbors were shooting in. I have no idea what was going on. No carpet left on the floor. Dirty dishes in the sink, dirty clothes on the couch. I mean, the place was a pigsty, and that's not the way I was brought up. And, you know, my first thought was I couldn't let anybody in my family take me home. So I had a friend drop me off, and I got up to the door. It was November the 8th. It was a bitter cold night. There was a note on the door from the bank. They were foreclosing on my house. I went inside. It was a total disaster. There was no lights, no phone, no heat, no running water. And I said, "I can't stay here." And I went to the bar. And I sat in the same seat I always sat in, and I ordered a shot of tequila and a beer chaser. And I looked up, and I saw myself in a mirror that had always been there. But I had never seen myself as I did that night. And what I saw was like a full-length movie. It probably was less than 20 seconds, but to me, it was a full-length movie of what I had done with my life and what a mess I had created, and that I was hopeless and helpless and pathetic, and I needed help. And I put that drink down and walked out of there. I never took it. That's why I consider that to be my sobriety date. Then I ended up in the halls of Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh, my God. I could not believe these people. You know, first of all, I went to my first meeting. There's this guy standing outside, little old guy shaking all over. I thought, Jesus, he's got the DTs. Why don't somebody get him a drink? What happened? He stuck his hand out to me and he said, "Welcome, you're amongst your own kind." And I thought, "I don't think so, bucko." And then I went inside, and the next guy that I met was really tall, and he had a belt buckle. It was right at my eye level, and it said bullshit. And he was all happy, and he said, "Keep coming back, honey. It gets better and better every day." And I thought, better in what? You know, and then, you know, right off the bat, some lady gave a talk. I don't know what she said. She offered a white chip to help you start a new way of life. And I thought, you got to be kidding. You don't drink and they pay you in poker chips? I don't think so. The next words she said, though, were the words that this alcoholic needed to hear. And that was, "If you're too afraid to pick one up, see me after the meeting and I'll give you one." I was brought up with four brothers. I never let them know I was afraid of anything. So I marched up there and I got that chip. You know what happens when you pick up a white chip in AA? You get surrounded by women and they're like, you know, "Keep coming back, keep coming back." You know, I thought they said, "We need you." I mean, I had a problem with when time it left your mouth and got to my ears, it was totally something different. And then I started taking everybody's inventory and I thought, "I can't do this. I just can't do this." I white knuckled it for 30 days. And I thought, "I'll go get that 30-day chip and then I'm leaving." But that night there was a woman that stood at the podium and she had this great big pine cone on her head. And it played Christmas music because now it's Christmas time, right? And she said, "Oh, hi, everybody. My name's Ricky. And if I don't drink between now and May 1st, I'll be sober for 15 years. And I sat right in front of her because somebody said to me, "Lily, you should sit in the front row in front of the speaker. Shut your mouth, listen to what they have to say. And after they get done, thank the speaker." And she said that she was going to be sober for 15 years. And I shouted out, "Oh, you're crazy. They love you. Maybe I can stay." You know, and I went to her after the meeting and I said to her, "You're nuts. Doesn't seem to bother these people. I know that I'm crazy and I need help." And, you know, she didn't become my sponsor, but she was like a mentor. And then she said things to me like, you know, "Do you have a sponsor? You better get one right away." And I didn't want to get one, but I did get one, you know. And then I picked somebody I thought I could get away with a lot of stuff because I used to go drinking with her. And that was a big mistake. She was very serious about that big book, you know. And we went through the steps. And I remember I might have been 35 days sober. And she said to me, they're having a workshop on Saturday and you need to bring the donuts. And I said, wait just a minute. Nobody told me to bring donuts. And I'm not sure I even want to go to a stupid workshop. She said, well, you're going because you have to bring the donuts. And I said, nobody told me that I had to bring donuts. She said, I just did. Show up with the donuts. And I've been involved in service ever since. I mean, I've had every job in the home group and made up jobs for other people to have. And I've gone, the only thing I haven't done is go through all the chairs in our area. But I've remained busy in AA. And I wished I could say that when you come to AA, everything turns into sunshine and roses, but that's not the case. When I was 12 years sober, I lost my son. I had four children, two of whom became alcoholics, and one that died of SIDS, and one that was the superstar in the family. And he had just heard me speak at a convention. And he said, Mom, I don't know how you did that, but you got to keep on doing it because you're helping people. And 6 weeks later, I got a phone call that my son had passed away. And I made one phone call to somebody in AA, and I was surrounded. For the next month and a half, I was surrounded totally 24 hours a day with people from AA. My son had a hero's funeral. He was a policeman. He accomplished a lot in his young life. And, you know, I was surrounded by AA the whole time. And a funny thing that happened was at his wake, they had Marines, and he had been a Marine, and they also had police guarding his casket. And his police partner came up to me and he said, Lily, I've been to a lot of funerals for a lot of cops, and I've never been to one where anybody's had as many friends as you do. And I said, I know they couldn't all come. And he said, I beg your pardon. I said, well, they wanted to. But when they got here and saw all these cruises, they kept on going. I was drinking at a place called the Dump on the Hump. Anyway, I got to tell you that you can suffer something that's the most horrible thing you can think of is burying a child. But if you're lucky enough to be a member of AA, it's a whole lot easier to bear that. People in AA have helped me beyond anything that I can tell you. And I know to this day, it's been 23 years since my son passed away. But I can tell you right now that I know that the people that are listening to me today, that if I knew your phone number and it was 3 o'clock in the morning and I was having a bad night for some reason or another, I could call you and you would help me. And I would help any of you. What I do today is I'm crazy and Nikki's crazy. And I have a best friend who is an honorary member of Al-Anon, who's also crazy. We've been friends for 81 years. And we decided that we like to put on shows. And so that's what we do. Nikki and Lily and Betty are the producers and directors of the So Not Perfect Players. And we put on a couple of shows. Well, we started out putting on one show a year, but we like it so much that now we think we're going to do two a year. And we're in rehearsals now for the next, for the very next show, which is going to be in May. And I got to tell you, getting together, all of the people that are in the show are in recovery. And all of those people will do just about anything that we ask them to do. And we talk them into doing some pretty crazy stuff. And this year we have five guys that are going to do a ballerina dance, and they're dancing to Swan Lake, only we're calling it Swine Lake. So hopefully Nikki will have a video of that and she can send it off to some of you that might want to see it. But my life today is beyond anything that I ever dreamed it could be. I live in subsidized housing for senior citizens. I have a very limited income every month, But you know, I've never been happier in my life. I'm free. I've made amends to people I never thought I would make amends to. And I realized that I had a part of the street, you know, and that part of my biggest problem is that I was selfish in ways that I didn't even know were selfish. You know, today I'm living the good life. Today, I'm a lucky member of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're new and hearing this for the first time, I want to tell you what was told to me. Fasten your seatbelt and welcome to the greatest adventure of your life. Because I'm telling you right now, Alcoholics Anonymous is the greatest reality show on the face of the earth. Thank you very much for letting me share.
Thanks so much, Lily. In case you missed it, Lily's in the next room over from me. So if you heard laughing outside of her, it was me. I've gotten some texts saying, thank you very much. This has been lovely. And I am grateful that Lily didn't tell all the stories.
I can still tell the story about the boots.
Let's just put it this way. I was playing a part and I needed some tall boots and they went to Lily's house and she had a fire and the fireman came and looked at her and wondered why she was wearing these very tall boots. There's more to tell, but I'm not going to do that today. Lily and I have been friends for a long time and I'm grateful to tell everybody that in Alcoholics Anonymous, we have friends that we go to for various things. And both of these women are people that I can go to with some of the saddest things in my life and some of the happiest times and anywhere in between. Really grateful. And if you're not lucky enough to have the people on this screen be your friends, stick around in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's inevitable. Please let your friends know about our meeting. This is an open meeting, so it's also ideal for friends who want to learn more about Alcoholics Anonymous. Keep this in mind when doing cooperation with the professional community or public information work. And I'll invite Najini to close us out.
Yes, Najini Alcoholic, will you please help me close this meeting with a responsibility statement? I am responsible.
Anyone, anywhere reaches out for Alcoholics Anonymous. I want the hand of Alcoholics Anonymous to always be there. And for that, I am responsible.
Thank you again, Najini. Thank you, Lily. Thanks to everybody listening. I won't be here next week. Chris will do a great job. But just remember, it's your responsibility to have a grape day. Thank you.